Aloha, everyone. Welcome to Empowered Living Radio. I'm your host, Tori Eldridge, empowerment specialist and author of Empowered Living Expanded Edition, a guide to physical and emotional protection. Mahalo to Jim Kimo West for tonight's music and to our sponsor, Michael Lowndes and PML Media. Our website, professionals at pmlmedia.com. This show, we're going to delve into the world of mental illness with an author who has been living creatively and successfully with bipolar. His name is Chris Orchid, and he's an author's author who writes everything from literature, mysteries, nonfiction, plays, articles, even speeches. You could say that his writing is as much a part of his life as breathing. But so is his bipolar disorder. And he has much to share with those of us seeking for a better understanding of mental illness, for those suffering from some form of it, and even those of us who might just welcome some strategies for managing our own mood swings. So, Chris, welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
Tori, thank you so much for having me. I've really been looking forward to this.
So have I.
Well, you know, your conversational style, I've heard in your other interviews, I think really lends itself to this topic.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know, I think right now, especially, mental illness is a hot topic, and it affects all of us in society, either directly or indirectly. So I think it's an important conversation to have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's still, you know, we're in the 21st century, and we no longer have these 19th century asylums, at least in this country, where people afflicted with mental illness are locked up in cages. But, you know, there's still a lot of stigma and misinformation out there. So the more people can know about it, the better.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm happy to, you know, lend my voice and experience. I mean, I want to be clear. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. But I'm a writer and an artist and a man who has lived with this for many years now. And I've developed a set of strategies and a lot of thinking about. I've given this a lot of thought over the years, so I think people can benefit.
How could you not?
What's that?
Yeah, how could you not give it a lot of thought? I mean, it's such a huge part of your everyday living. I read your blog, one of your recent blogs, where you talked about taking a vacation in a psychiatric hospital, and I was thinking that while I'm sure you've been referring to this in the past, I got the impression that this was the first time that you made such a public declaration
bipolar. Yes, definitely. This was the first time I made such a public declaration. My wife said to one of her friends, Chris came out of the closet regarding being bipolar, and he's a gay man in California, and he said, no, Alexis, because we have that patent pending coming out of the closet. So I wasn't able to use that. But yeah,
you're not able
to
come out of
the closet. This is the first time I was openly public about it. I mean, only my closest friends have known about it. And I just felt it was time. You know, I went into the hospital in March, and I was suffering from what's known as rapid cycling.
What's that?
Well, people who are afflicted with bipolar, one of the conditions that can occur is that bipolar, of course, is the shifting in mood from, you know, depression to elation, depression to mania. And in rapid cycling, these cycles come very quickly upon each other.
Like how quickly are we talking
about? I mean,
about?
It can be a matter of hours. I mean, so I was in a place where I was, working on my latest book, and I would read to the end of a chapter and just start sobbing. And
oh, no.
And then 10 minutes later, I'm laughing hysterically at some stupid meme on Facebook. There was that David Cameron meme going around, you know, where he staged the phone call with President Obama, you know, the picture of him with the phone, and then all of these celebrities started putting up pictures of themselves holding bananas and, you know, toasters and all of this foolishness. Well, there was one that I saw with a phone handset up to a dog, and then underneath it read, "Hello, this is dog." And, you know, it's not that funny.
But right.
But when you are in the midst of a rapid cycling state, it was hilarious. And then 10 minutes later or half an hour later, I'm, you know, abysmally depressed again. So that's that's what put me into the hospital recently. And when I went in, I just saw what brave people are in there. And I saw for the first time that there truly are a lot of people, you know, suffering in silence with mental illness and, you know, concerned about stigma, et cetera. And so I resolved when I got out, I was just going to say, because before I went in, I said, look, you know, the editing the book has taken a lot out of me. I'm going on a vacation, and people were wishing me. They're like, hey, have fun. You know, hope you go down to the Caribbean. Have a great time. And not the Caribbean, you know, 24-hour lockdown.
Wow.
Well, you know, they do that because they, you know, it's about protecting you from yourself. And but the bottom line is that out of that experience, I decided that I wanted to come out about it. And the people at Bring Change to Mind, for example, Glenn Close's organization picked up on that blog piece that I wrote and put it on their website. And so,
really? Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they were really pleased with it. And, you know, I'm gratified that people got something out of it. I kind of did it as a, I mean, I took it seriously, but I, to me, it was kind of a throwaway. You know, it was kind of like, here's what happened. You know, I'm coming out about this, and here's the truth. But what's interesting is with writing, and particularly, you know, writing or talking about the subject of mental illness, people really respond to truth and vulnerability.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So could you tell me a little bit about what Glenn Close is doing with her foundation?
Absolutely, Tori. I mean, again, I'm not a spokesman for bringchangetomind.org, but Glenn Close started up an organization centered around ending stigma and discrimination as it relates to mental illness. And, you know, they have a website, Bring Change to Mind, with a two in there, and they have videos, they have basically support information, they have facts about the various mental illnesses, bipolar, obsessive compulsive disorder, schizophrenia, and it's all as a means of getting people to get over misconceptions that they have about mental illness. And, you know, the thing is that these things, you know, a meme is not the concept that it's been made out to be on the internet. A true meme is a thought. It's kind of an inbred, ingrained thought that goes unquestioned, whether in a person's mind or in society. And so there are all of these memes out there as they relate to mental illness. You know, one of them that is persistent is schizophrenic people are, you know, dangerous, you know, are notoriously dangerous to people. That bipolar people are all going to be violent. Well, these are some of the memes that the old term for bipolar was manic depressive.
Right.
And I think it was around the 70s or 80s that psychiatrists made the shift to the better euphemism bipolar
right.
disorder.
Right, so it could use that other swing, that swing into the euphoria
right.
that you were talking about earlier,
right.
whereas manic depressive implies that you're always on this one side.
Right, and you know, just to be clear, my interaction with bringchangetomind.org so far has been pretty small, but I was contacted by one of the directors there who read that blog piece that I wrote, and you know, it went semi-viral, at least through the mental health community. So, you know, that's my connection to them, and they actually are going to be undergoing a new campaign to try to educate men who are potentially mentally ill on mental illness and on the benefits of getting treatment. And so that was one of the things they wanted to talk to me about is, you know, how can we persuade mentally ill men to, you know, come into the fold and get treatment and that sort of thing. So that
right.
may be something I'm going to be doing down the road here.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it, because recognition, you know, I mean, that's the first step. You can't solve a problem or address a problem if you don't even understand that one exists.
Absolutely.
You've been living with this, obviously, all your life, but at what point did you realize that other people might not be suffering in this way, that there might be something going on? How old were you?
Oh, gosh, I think that's great. I mean, I first discovered I had a problem when I was – see, I self-medicated all through college. And self-medicating, basically, you know, when you're talking about mental illness and bipolar in particular, when someone says self-medicating, they take other drugs or alcohol to basically quash the symptoms, you know, mm-hmm. to even things out. And I did it. I drank a lot in college. And
mm-hmm.
Looking back on it now, I know that that was self-medication. That was, you know, I didn't know that I had bipolar, but the alcohol, you know, it evened out my moods and made it easier for me to function. So mm-hmm. I first began to discover I had a problem. I think I was home from college Christmas time. No, I was home for the summer after my freshman year. And this is kind of an amusing anecdote. I said to myself, gosh, you know, you're really depressed right now. I should go see somebody. Well, it turned out that nearby where I was living where I'm living now in Millbrook, New York, there was a therapy center. And so I got an appointment and I went in, and it was one of these old buildings with the floor-to-ceiling windows.
Mm-hmm.
So and it was summertime, beautiful day outside. And the therapist came in and she said, "It's nice to meet you, Chris. I'm looking forward to talking to you." And I got very nervous. And she said, "I'll be right back." And she goes out of the room. Well, that window was just gaping there. So I went out the window, walked away, never went back.
Oh, no.
I know. It was like I was overcome. I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. And so I just escaped out the window. And I ended up giving that trait to a fictional character later on, so something came out of it. But that was when I was about 19. And then I really discovered I had a problem when I got to be about 25, 26. I would have days upon days of, you know, sobbing in bed, complete inability to even get out of bed, just physically drained to the point where I just couldn't even move. And then, a few days later or weeks later, I would be up all night long, reading on the computer, driving around, you know, random places, occasionally cleaning something, although if you ask my wife, it probably very little of that happened. And also getting into conflicts with neighbors or other people over dumb things. Like I remember where we were living in Portland, Maine, I had this conflict with the next door neighbors regarding parking because we had kind of a narrow driveway situation. In all of these things, I looked at it and I saw how depressed I was or how hyper I was.
Agitated.
In some cases, you know, I wasn't outright violent, but there seemed to be the, you know, possibility there for violence. And I said to my wife, Alexis, I said, you know, I think there's something wrong with me. This just does not seem normal, and I need to talk to somebody about it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I saw my first psychiatrist, who unfortunately missed the diagnosis. And this is something that happens quite often with people who are bipolar, because what happens is they're presenting, if they go to the doctor and they're just presenting the depressive symptoms, for example,
right,
the psychiatrist will tend to think, oh gosh, you know, they're just depressed. And so here are some antidepressants. And when you do that, one of the things that can happen is that the manic symptoms, if a person has a manic episode, those symptoms become worse. And so had a, you know, incomplete diagnosis there for a couple of years, but then I met my current doctor, and I've been with her about 15 years now, and she's just terrific, and she gave me the right diagnosis and got me on appropriate medication, and, you know, it's never been easy, but
I can't imagine.
It's gotten easier.
Were you kind of savvy by the time you got to her so that you could warn her, hey, look, you know, today is one of my depressed days or today is one of my hyper days, but that isn't the sum total of what you're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I had enough data by then to know, you know, I had a backlog of experience to point to. So I could show, and I actually for a while, per her suggestion, kept kind of a mood chart, and basically I would record every day, you know, what my mood was, 0 to 10, you know, 0 being highly depressed, 10 being highly manic.
I see.
And I recorded my moods diligently for about a year. Maybe I have OCD as well, but you know, I mean, I'm there writing 4, 7, you know.
Well, aren't a lot of these things, don't they kind of overlap? We have a son who has OCD and Tourette's syndrome, and they just intertwine,
yes.
You know. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, he has his own sense of what he thinks is going on play, you know, depending on whether it's kind of physical tics or emotional self-persecution. He kind of credits one or the other.
I think
it's interesting, right.
I mean, I think that many of them do overlap, and it's difficult to say, you know, where bipolar ends, and some people can have extreme bipolar. For example, it's believed that Van Gogh was bipolar, and toward the end of his life, he began to exhibit schizophrenic and psychotic, you know, symptoms. So, you know, it's, I don't think there are any clear delineations And, you know, we're all more complex than that, right? I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
We're all more complex than that.
And it's got to be a little, I don't know, I keep thinking it's got to be a little bit subjective. It's not like you can take a blood test and it says, okay, right. Boom, you're bipolar.
Right.
You know, so there's a third party who is observing mm-hmm. and coming to this conclusion, this diagnosis. So, there's a lot of room for error. There's a lot of room for, well, we thought it was this, but maybe it's that, and maybe it's a combination of these things. It's got to make it just incredibly challenging.
It really is, because, you know, all you have to base this on is your own experience. And when you go mm-hmm. to see medical professionals, I mean, they're seeing you as an outsider, and certainly you need to have that point of view. But, you know, I think the touchstone is, to what extent do your mood swings or your tics, your behaviors, to what extent do your problems with mental health affect your life?
Exactly.
And for some people, some people may have some mild mental health issues, but they don't necessarily need to go see a psychiatrist and get on medication and do all of that. It comes down to, is this affecting my life? Is this preventing me from living a full, happy, and fulfilled life?
Right.
Because if it is, then you need to seek out help.
I love that you mentioned this, because it's really true. I mean, I look on the lighter side, you know, the way I think just about everybody, if you ask them, will say, oh, yeah, I've got OCD, you know, compulsion, sure, you know, I check the door handle repeatedly, or I'm constantly twirling my hair, or, you know, they can point out something, I twiddle with my foot or whatever. But as you say, it doesn't get in the way. It's sort of this kind of idiosyncratic thing, right?
Exactly.
But when I remember watching our son, and when he was in, sixth grade or something, he had this particularly horrid tic in which he would squeeze his eyes shut and turn his head to the side. And this could happen as infrequently as, you know, once every couple of minutes, or it could happen every 15 seconds.
Mm.
Can you imagine trying to read?
If
every 15 seconds you closed your eyes and turned your head to the side, it was horrible. I had to read with him. I had to read aloud, and I had to put my finger on the page. I had to hold the book, because when his eyes came back, he had no idea where he was. And by the time he found where he was, it would happen again. It was awful.
That is unreal. But it's a hell of a testament to you as a mother to, you know, I think every parent would like to think that they would have that degree of patience and fortitude to press on with teaching their son how to read under those conditions. But I think it's a heck of a testament to you in what
well,
you did there.
Well, I appreciate that. And part of the thing that made it easier was that I had gone through a lot of very similar things when I was young. But the difference was, they were weird looking and they were distracting, a lot of physical twitches and tics and whatnot. But they weren't incapacitating mm-hmm. and they didn't interfere with learning and they didn't interfere with functioning or anything like that. They were just odd. They were very odd.
Right.
And kind of internally stressful, but they didn't interfere.
Right.
And that's what you were just saying. With my son, I mean, it shut down. For a while, he would perseverate with his handwriting, so he couldn't write himself. Mm-hmm. He was having trouble reading. So we were joined at the hip, he and I. I did the pencil. You know, I helped with the reading while he would verbally, you know, tell me what to write. I mean, we needed this symbiotic relationship. It ended up being very bonding. And through the time, I went on some medication, and through the time, learned some techniques and strategies. And now, gosh, he does a great job at adapting around it and working through it and functioning. He's functioning with it at a high level, and it's fantastic.
That's great.
And so it's exactly what you said, you know, when these things, because what, we all have mood swings, right?
Right.
But they don't all stop our life.
Right. I mean, one of the things about that I'd like to mention about bipolar, you know, that is particularly tricky is this. You know, one of the problems is, you know, nobody with bipolar wants the depressive cycle. Okay. You know, you have mm-hmm. these cycles, you know, if you consider them like waves, you know, the trough of the wave is when you're depressed. And then the zenith or the, you know, top of the wave is when mm-hmm. you're in a manic or upbeat cycle. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody with bipolar wants the depressive cycles. But we all love the manic cycles. And, I mean, we just love it. You have more energy. The ideas come to you over and over and over again. And so...
Must be like being on a high. Huh?
Oh, it's... I mean, it is... It can be a high beyond high. I mean, it is just staggering. And the, what I wanted to say there, though, is that there are a lot of people out there who... have bipolar who choose not to take medication or, you know, they don't take their medication. They don't see their doctor. They don't undergo any treatment whatsoever because they don't want to give up those manias. They don't want to give up. And this is particularly true among creative people. I've heard this from several creative people. Well, you know, I don't want to take those meds because they're going to, you know, take down my creative thinking. And when I'm on a manic high, my creative thinking is marvelous. And it's, well, let me tell you what's going on there. One of the things that happens is it's called flights of ideas. Mm-hmm. And when a person is in a manic cycle, you know, you just have, oh, this idea, oh, this is great, oh, yeah, and I'm going to do this one, and I'm going to do this one, and then I'm going to do this, and guess what? Nothing happens.
You don't do any
you
of them.
You don't do any of them. And I've come up with a metaphor that I've used to explain to people. When that happens, that's like putting a race car on an icy lake. You know, if you put
Ooh,
a race car
on
an icy lake and you rev the engine full tilt, guess what? That car is not getting off the lake. The tires will burn right through the ice before the car will get off the lake. Mm-hmm. That's if you're, you know, unmedicated. That's that, oh, this idea is great, and this one, and this one, and this one. And so what you actually have to do is you have to, through treatment and medication, you need to take your foot off the accelerator just a little bit. And mm-hmm. just that little bit enables your mind to get traction, you know, and you get traction with ideas. And then you're able to see which of these dozen ideas that you've come up with, which are the best ones to invest your time in. And I have found, I think I am much more productive as a writer and artist, just a human being, because of that, you know, taking the foot off the accelerator and getting traction with my ideas and my life.
Well, this is such an important thing that you're saying, that the thing that's occurring to me, you know, for people in general, is this sounds like a difference between authentic joy mm-hmm. and tripping on magic mushrooms.
Yes. 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 That's a great way of putting it. That's a great way of putting it.
No, because that's what this sounds like to me when you're saying, oh, all these ideas coming and, you know, everything is so funny and everything is so great and everything is so, you know, euphoric. It sounds like a drug trip.
Well, it's the old, you know, not that I've ever inhaled, okay, but, you know, it's the old somebody, if one were to smoke marijuana and then make a note in a notebook and one were to wake up the next day and read what one wrote in that notebook, you know, it's always something. It's like
probably wouldn't be too coherent.
The dogs are wonderful in trees. You know, what? Where did this come from? You know, that's the that's the kind of course that that thinking takes.
Yeah. Yeah. So to give that up, wow, I mean, people put in so much effort, so much money, right? So much everything into getting those highs.
Yes.
Those wonderful feeling, escapism, nonsensical, euphoric highs. And here's somebody with bipolar who gets it for nothing. They've got it. It's part of the package. And now you're saying, now you have to convince them, I know this seems like something you really want to hang on to, and it's something that so many people are trying desperately to get with all sorts of drugs and various things, but really, really, dude, you'd be better off without it.
Yeah, I mean,
that's got to be a hard sell.
Well, you know, you want some of it. I mean, you want some of it. And in the best case scenario, you know, none of this goes away. I mean, the medication and treatment with a doctor, it doesn't go away. It just evens out the moods. So if you were to think of the moods as, you know, a Richter scale registers, you know, vibrations from an earthquake, and you know, if it's a big earthquake, you know, the Richter scale's going off the charts. It's just this really jagged set of lines. Well, what the medication and treatment does is you still have those mood swings, and you still have those highs. They're just not quite as high.
Are they higher than you think they are for people who don't have bipolar?
Yes.
So your mood swings, even under medication, are probably more extreme than mine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's that's not going to be true categorically, but from my experience, I've learned that there's no one chemical or medicinal cocktail that's going to fix everything. It's not going to cure it. There's no one treatment that's going to fix it. It's an ongoing process. It's trying different things. It's being aware of your reactions to things. I mean, I'll give you an example. One of the things that can happen with bipolar people is we can be very irritable. Sometimes when we're depressed, sometimes if we're in a manic cycle. And, you know, this was said of Hemingway that, you know, somebody could talk to Hemingway one moment and he'd get really angry with him. Just prior to the interaction, it was like a sunny day with him.
Mm-hmm.
He would become extremely angry, and it was as though a thunderstorm passed over him. But just like a summer thunderstorm, it blew through quickly, and then it's sunny again. And that's an experience that I have frequently, and I think a lot of bipolar people do.
Sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. You know who it's the most exhausting for?
Your wife.
My wife. The people who love us. I mean, seriously. You know, she talks about the spouses, and she's done a lot of reading and participated in support groups online, and she likens it to, you know, and it makes me sad to say this, because you don't want to put the ones you love into this frame of mind, but she likens it to walking on eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hate being like that, you know, but the thing is, you know, we make the best effort we can, but sometimes these emotional reactions just come before you can give them thought. It's
sure.
It's difficult.
Does it help to know what's going on logically, what's going on, so that if if you're in the throes of one of these swings, if she were to point it out to you,
yes,
would that help you to bring it under control, or would that just set you off? I mean, is it like telling a woman who's, you know, tripping on PMS that she's got PMS? You know, you don't know what you're going to get, right? She'll either bite your head off or she'll go, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I think the first rule there is don't say anything to the woman. To the woman with PMS.
Oh, really? Oh, because I was always very logical. I was always like, oh, yeah, you're right. That's what this is. Or I'd be, you know, one of those days where, oh, my God, I look horrible and the hair is awful and I'm just, oh, starting to feel so bloogy. And my husband would say, yeah, what time of month is it? And I'd go, oh, yeah, that's why. Oh, okay.
I think.
And it would all be better for me because I'd go, oh, I understand it.
I mean, I think, you know, that understanding goes to care, you know, how are you caring for, how are you managing this disease? And I have found in my experience, these are the things that can help you get, you know, bipolar. But I, in my reading, have discovered too that these techniques can help people with other mental illnesses as well. If you're put under a medication regime by a doctor, you've got to take it seriously. You've got to take your meds. You've got to do it every day. You've got to do it on time. You've got to really work hard at not missing dosages. So that's one thing. Sleep consistency. Sleep and getting consistent sleep at consistent times a day is so important with bipolar and other mental illnesses, because with bipolar, you know, a lack of sleep or a change in sleep patterns can be one of the triggers to a mood swing.
Wow.
And it's happened to me many times. If I go traveling and my internal clock gets messed up and I'm staying up late and getting up early in the morning, I'm going to suffer from it. I'm going to, you know, either launch into a hypomanic phase of, you know, just high energy and potentially doing things that I shouldn't be doing, or, you know, a depressive phase. And then the other three very quickly are, you know, self-care is so important, eating, exercise, et cetera, reducing stress. You know, and I know that goes for everybody's life, but reducing stress, because stress is, again, a major trigger with mood disorders. And I the last one I would add to this is eliminating cacophony and distractions in your life. You know, don't have Fox News and MSNBC playing in your house at the same time. You know, you know what I'm saying? Bring that conflicting negative energy into your surroundings, because it's not good for a calm state of mind, which is what you really need to work through this stuff.
Right. Well, all of this makes so much sense. My goodness, I think we should all apply it. Each and every point that you just made, I think we should apply it. You know, whether we're you know, on some medication to treat, you know, a physical illness or whatever, from that to sleep to, you know, personal care to reducing stress and to eliminating this unnecessary discord.
Right.
Sometimes I think we go out of our way to surround ourselves by it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that a lot of people want these distractions in their lives. You know, they want these distractions, the stress. They want to put more stress on themselves by, you know, not sleeping consistently and this sort of thing. I think there's no question about it. I think anybody can benefit from it. You know, there are a lot of people out there who, while they might not suffer from, you know, mental illness per se, there are a lot of people out there who live lives where they're very governed by their emotions.
Yes.
You know, where they react to things and to events, and they do so emotionally. And, you know, it reminds me of a really great book I read several years ago. It's called Deep Survival, and it was written by this man, Lawrence Gonzalez, and it's a pretty famous book now. And in it, he profiles, you know, dozens of people who survived avalanches, being lost in the woods, lost at sea, plane crashes, and he found that the number one thing they all had in common was they were consistently asking, what is going on right now? They were constantly asking themselves the truth about their current situation and then devising and enacting a plan to deal with the truth of the situation. And I think that this is something that people who are controlled by their emotions can really benefit from. Rather than reacting to this emotion that comes into their head, to start to ask themselves, what is really happening here?
Yes.
Because, you know, you as a martial artist and someone who knows meditation, you know that one of the primary ideas with Zen meditation, for example, is if the thought or emotion comes in, just observe it and let it go. You know, don't get attached to it, because that's how you, once you start getting attached to the idea or the emotion when it comes in, you're not able to settle into the meditation.
Well, sure. And you can fuel it.
Right.
It's like adding lighter fuel to whatever is sparking.
Absolutely.
You know, get yourself lost in an inferno of emotions that never needed to get there. And also, it's like being in an altercation or a conversation, an unpleasant conversation with another person. You say something, they say something, and then you react to the way in which they said the something.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden you're reacting to their emotion or what you perceive their tone to mean, rather than what they were actually communicating, what they were actually saying. Or to be even deeper, to be even more skillful at communication, to be able to hear what they were saying, which may not have been too skillful, observe the tone, which may not be too helpful, and to understand what's causing it, what's likely to be at the bottom of this, underneath all of this mess, and then react to that.
Exactly. React to
not
the
all
fact
this
of
distracting
it.
Stuff.
Yeah.
React to what's really under there.
That's brilliant. I mean, I think we're on the same page with this deep survival idea and what you were just saying. You know, what's really being said here right now?
Right.
What's really happening here right now? This person across from me is, you know, reacting with or addressing me aggressively or fearfully, etc. But what's behind that tone? What's the substance of the conversation? What is he or she really trying to say here?
Mm-hmm. Or what is he or she really reacting to?
Right.
Like, for instance, boy, you know, if you're married out there, if you're living with another person in your home, you know exactly what this is like, where the person comes in, you say something, you get a reaction that was really not what you were expecting, that might even be completely unreasonable, that might be, you know, highly emotional. And instead of buying into that, sometimes the best thing to say is, how was your day?
Mm.
What just happened? What's going on? And frequently, that's when you get to the truth. It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with what you just said.
Right.
It has everything to do with what just happened an hour ago or 5 hours ago or at work or in traffic or whatever. And boy, you know, that can save us a lot of heartache.
That is so true. I mean, it is so true that we, you know, throughout the day, we absorb these interactions, or, you know, what we perceive is going on in these interactions. And I know, you know, when my wife comes home from work, or when she comes home, if she seems in a bad mood, that's one of the things I try to ask her. And if once she gets telling me about her day, then we discover what the root of the problem was. And the same for me.
And that's got to be doubly important for you, because you don't want whatever's going on in her life to be a trigger to one of your swings.
You know, you're right.
Same way that putting on Fox and MSN.
Right. It's difficult.
You know, if
it's
you're around somebody.
Though, because you want, Tori, you know, you really want as a spouse. You know, I have bipolar, but I'm also a husband, and I want to be there for my wife. I want to be there for my friends and family. And, you know, sadly, though, you know, I find myself quite often having to distance myself from friends, family, and other people, because I just can't deal with it. You know, it's like I'm full up here. It's, you know,
right.
I'm dealing with, I've got all I can do to hold it together for myself. And, you know, that I don't interact with my family maybe as much as I should. I don't interact with all of my friends as much as I should. But this is one of those things. With all people who are mentally ill, there are a couple of things going on. One is, you know, we don't want to bring down other people around us. And I think second, you know, I don't always want to talk about, you know, how I'm feeling, what I'm doing, and, you know, what my latest appointment might have been like, because this doesn't define who I am. You know, this is just one thing. And we all have, you know, we all have crosses to bear. We all have maladies that we're dealing with, and you just march on and do the best that you can.
Well, and it's interesting what you were saying just now about not wanting to go into it. And I guess that's what I was alluding to. You probably need to be even more skillful at getting to the bottom of, for instance, something that might be troubling your wife, so that you don't get involved in a reactive emotional thing. Because when we can start addressing what's really going on, there's much less emotion there, generally speaking. And even if it's one of those situations where the person that you're talking to doesn't want to go into it, and they say, you know, I don't want to go into that, you understand that.
Right.
And that can be enough. Just that much self-awareness and communication can once again make our relationships with others and ourselves so much easier, if we can just recognize the fact that we don't want to go there right now.
You're so right.
And to be able to say that, you know what, I had a bad day, you're right, it's not you, but I don't want to go there.
Yeah, and that statement is many times all you need. And you know, mentally ill or not, just it's a comfort just to know that our friend, family member, or significant other thinks enough of us and what we might be going through to ask. That being said, it's good when they can accept as an answer, thank you for asking, but I really don't feel like getting into it right now.
Yes.
You know, and to have that mutual understanding is terrific, and I think you really hit it on the head there.
Well, I'm glad. Well, you know, again, from the very beginning of our conversation, we were talking about recognition. You know, just understanding what's going on or that book that you were talking about. Just understanding what's going on inside of us, what's going on between us, is huge. You know, whether you're dealing with PMS to mental illness to, you know, surviving in an avalanche.
You know, one of the stigmas, Tori, that I'd like to address is that, you know, for a long, long time in our society, there has been this, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, son, and move on. You know, don't sit in the gutter feeling sorry for yourself. You know, you just got the blues, boy. Get up and start walking. And listen, here's the thing.
Or my favorite, you're just overly sensitive.
You're just overly sensitive. You just need a little rest. Listen, here's the thing. That is true sometimes of some people. That's true at times of all of us, you know, that we're just having a rough patch. You know, we had a bad day. You know, we're tired. We just got the blues. It's a rainy day. But with mental illness, and particularly depression and bipolar, this is not something that you can just think your way out of, okay?
Right.
And this is the thing, this is a misconception, a stigma that drives me crazy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can't just think your way out of it. There's a very famous scene in the movie A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe, who plays the mathematician John Nash. And John Nash is in the kitchen, and he's having delusions or hallucinations of some other characters. And also in the room with him is his wife and a psychiatrist, his psychiatrist played by Christopher Plummer. And the conversation is basically this. John Nash says, listen, you know, everything I'm going through right here, it's a problem, and I'm great at solving problems, and I'll solve this one. And the psychiatrist, Christopher Plummer, points out, he says, no, you won't, because the problem is in your mind, and you need your mind. Your mind is what is going to enable you to solve the problem. The very mechanism by which you need to get yourself out of the hole is broken. And this is why I get so tired of these pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, just think positive thoughts ideas when it comes to depression, you know, diagnosed depression or bipolar, because we're talking about a chemical imbalance in the brain. You know, it's a chemical imbalance in the brain. And what I liken it to is this. It's as though you are down, you're under a very high wall. You're at the foot of a very high wall. And above that wall, you can see out, you can see clearly, you know, you get a full 360-degree, clear, unobstructed view of the world. But how are you going to get up there? Okay? Well, you need a ladder. Medication and treatment is the ladder that gets you to the top of that wall so you can see out. You know, and I guess what?
And then you can use the strategies that you were describing.
Exactly. You know, this is, you need to fix the mechanism, the physical mechanism, before you can begin to implement the strategies, et cetera. It's, the point is, if a person is depressed, bipolar, OCD, schizophrenic, they are not going to, they're not going to get there by behavioral changes alone.
Right.
You know, it, and
Yeah, I liked the way you said you can't think your way out of this. Telling somebody with OCD, you know, dude, you cannot think yourself out of this. It's your brain that's gotten you into this.
Right, right. And
it's your mind going around and around and around. How are you possibly going to think yourself out of it?
Yeah, it's, and I'm not saying that medication is, you know, the panacea here. Okay, mm-hmm. It's one part of the toolkit. But what I am saying is that people, you know, this stigma that people have that if people are depressed, it's particularly depression for some reason in this country, you know, because we all have this, there's this American can-do spirit and, you know, if that guy's depressed, he's just lazy. You know, there's this attitude out there of this, and this attitude, this stigma toward people, particularly who are depressed. And it's just not the truth, you know? I mean, it may be true of some people just having the blues or whatever, but if somebody has a true chemical imbalance in their brain, they can't just think their way out of it, you know? They can't just perk up and, you know, I don't care, you know, how much Norman Vincent Peale they read, and I've read all of his books. I've read all of Dr. Wayne Dyer's books. I've read all of Deepak Chopra's works, and they're all terrific. And they have given a lot to people, you know, both afflicted with mental illness and those of us just trying to improve our lives. But again, you can't always just think your way out of it. And if somebody has a chemical imbalance, you definitely can't.
Well, I think, and that's the problem with depression, is that we all experience a bit of it.
Right.
So we feel this sense of commonality.
Right.
So there's this tendency of, well, this worked for me, so this
should
work for you.
That's a good point.
And there isn't this degree of, well, there isn't this quantifiable difference that we spoke of, you and I, earlier, which is, yeah, there's feeling blue, and then there's depression that interferes with you functioning in life.
Right.
You know, we were talking about, you know, those little OCD twirling the hair, tapping the foot thing, and now I can't read.
Right.
You know, so there's that difference between, yeah, I'm feeling just, you know, really sad today and I don't know why.
Right.
And, you know, I think I'll just hole up with a blanket and a good movie and a good night's sleep and tomorrow will be better. And you know what? For me, that's generally the case. Tomorrow's better. In fact, you know what? An hour is probably better.
I envy you. I mean, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, but if I was in a situation where I noticed this isn't ending tomorrow or the next day or the next day, you know, it's going on for days. And then now I'm laughing hysterically over a dog meme, you know, right? This is not the same thing. This is not the same thing. We've upped the ante.
Right.
You know, now it is interfering with the function of my life.
Right.
And so we do. We have to understand the difference in ourselves, and we have to appreciate the difference in other people. We have to recognize that, no, you know what? When they say depression, they're talking about something completely different.
Absolutely.
Than what I mean for myself. And I say, oh, yeah, I'm kind of depressed today.
And you make such a great point, Tori. And I would add to that, you know, we're not marginalizing people who aren't chemically imbalanced or who don't have clinical depression. You know, we're not marginalizing their feelings and their depression because it's all relative, you know.
Right.
You know,
yeah, it still hurts.
It still hurts, and it's, you know,
it's still a bummer.
It's my hurt, you know, and
yeah.
I'm sorry if it's not, you know, a 10 or a 2 on the scale, but it's still my hurt. But, It's addressing, and this is one of the things that Bring Change to Mind is doing, and I think the more people with mental illness who speak openly about it can do, and that is to really help end these you know, I'm just going to say it. You know, these knucklehead stigmas that we have, these knucklehead attitudes of, you know, well, he's just lazy. He's not depressed. He's just lazy. Or, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And, you know, what do you have to feel sad about? You know, it's this lack of understanding that it's not a matter of just thinking your way out of the thing. It's a chemical imbalance for some of us.
Yes. And there you say, the understanding. And, you know, how do we get there? But by having conversations like these. You know, so I can get a sense of what you're going through and you can explain these things and we can bounce around on these ideas and you can open up my eyes. And, you know, this is where we get that empathy and that understanding in society. That makes it so much easier for us to live with each other and appreciate each other and value each other. And I'm so glad that you were here to help with that. And I really, really appreciate that.
You know, the one last thing I'd want to say for myself, even though this disease can be a real pain in the butt sometimes, not just to myself, but to friends, family, and particularly my wife, I don't think I'd want it taken away from me, because I think that it has enabled me to write very deeply. And I feel things, I think, more deeply than a lot of people do on both ends of the spectrum, and have been able to work that perception into my work.
You know, and I've heard many people say things like that, the blessings and the afflictions.
Right.
And so I'm glad. And there are people out there who are going to want to read some of these wonderful things that you've written, and they're going to want to learn more about you. Where can they find you on the internet?
Well, my website is orcutt.net, orcutt.net, N-E-T. And I would say, you know, if they were interested in reading a good novel a novel where you can know the backstory. And the backstory is that the editing and making as perfect as possible this novel, 100 Miles from Manhattan, doing that put me into a psychiatric hospital. Because the stress of that, I'm not exaggerating,
wow.
I mean, the stress of that is what drove that rapid cycling I was talking about earlier.
Right, exactly.
You know, the sobbing and then the, you know, hello, this is dog hilarity. That all came from the stress of trying to make that novel as perfect as it could be. And the reviews are bearing it out that it is very good, but, you know, it was hard fought and not pleasant. You know, it didn't just come out of the oven.
Wow. Well, I'm going to keep this in mind when I read it.
Well, thank you very much, Tori. And
thank you. This has been really terrific. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the air and having this conversation.
It's my honor. I mean, I really appreciate your giving me an opportunity to speak out about mental illness and bipolar and, you know, some of these stigmas that have been out there and been on my mind and bothered me, and to have a forum where I can say something about them means a lot.
Oh, I'm so glad. Okay, folks, you can also find information on Chris Orcutt. You can get a recording of this podcast, previous shows, and information on upcoming guests and topics on my website, torieldridge.com. Next week, I'm going to delve into the frustrating and often ridiculous world of dating in the internet age with best-selling romantic comedy author and blogger extraordinaire Elle Lothlorien. In the meantime, you may follow me on Twitter @ToriEldridge and on the Empowered Living Radio Facebook page.
If you found some value in tonight's conversation, please share this podcast with your friends. A little empowerment goes a long way. Empowered Living Radio is a copyrighted podcast owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. You can find archived podcasts of all of our wonderful shows at authorsontheair.com. This is All Jam Up by Jim Chemo West. Learn about him at jimchemowest.com or on my website, torieldridge.com. Until next week, when we meet again, aloha nui loa.